Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done three things. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
All right, what's going on? Welcome to Cannell and Bell, hanging out on a Tuesday.
We got Welcome home, sir.
Yeah, I am back. We'll break down my round at Bethpage in a couple minutes. We got the Warriors, their sweep of Portland. What does that mean? The Lakers continue to be a disaster, and FAU has a new quarterback. Before we dive into my round at Bethpage, something's been happening that's been bothering me. It happens a lot.
Your shoulders are slumping. Mine are.
I got to get better posture. Yeah, but it looks kind of nerdy. I'm trying to figure out my posture. If you want to know what it looks like, you can watch us on CBS Sports HQ if you're listening to the podcast. When you are etiquette wise,
sure.
If I've done this before on the show with you, I know we might have done it in the meeting. If you're coming out, who has the right of way in a entryway? The person coming into a building, a bathroom, an elevator, a door, or the person exiting?
Exiting.
Always, right?
Always.
I've noticed it's happening a lot and it's bothering me like so much that I want to say something to people. It's happened a lot on elevators recently. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Like you're supposed to let the people off first.
Correct.
Like, I thought that was universal.
Elevators are the worst. Like I am at the ground floor.
Yeah.
You have to let me get off and force your way onto the elevator.
Right? Yeah. Even if it's on like the fifth floor and somebody's getting on, you're getting off. It should always be the person that gets off.
How do you feel about, that is a pet peeve clearly of yours and mine. How do you feel about I'm a big door holder. Like I'll hold the door, male or female, right?
Like
it's a common courtesy.
Yeah.
If you're within like, you know, 5, 6, 7 steps for sure, I'm holding the door.
Yes.
I might even give you a little bit more if you look friendly.
Right.
You walk all the way through. Don't say a word to me. What do you,
You gotta say thanks.
Would you say something as the door holder? Would you be like, yeah, you're welcome? Or do you just kind of let that slide?
No, I would probably let it slide, but there might be a side
sarcastic. I let it slide, but I got their kids, like, they're funny. These are little, like, 12-year-olds on my basketball team. One of them is
I would wear them out if they're not saying thank you.
These little dudes are like, if they hold the door for you and you go by and don't say thank you, they'll be like, you're welcome. Like, they don't care. They're
like, that. Kids tell it like it is. Right. That's what we do. If it was kids, I would wear them out. If they didn't say thank you, I'd slam it right before they got through.
I think it's huge, though. I teach my boys, like, all the time. Hey, man, let them go.
Especially, yes. You know, manners. They're lost art form. So we've got you covered here on Cannell and Bell. All your etiquette needs right here. So the reason I was off yesterday is because I stuck around, played Bethpage Black, the same exact course that the pros played from, where Brooks Koepka got his back-to-back.
I threw
back-to-back.
You all under the bus yesterday. It looked dark. They were showing Mark Immelman. Mark Immelman was doing like a shot, and I didn't realize it was from Friday or from Sunday night
because
it was really dark. And I was like, oh, man, is it raining up there today? Yes. I was like, it's raining. His round is ruined. I was like straight hating.
It was supposed to. I think it did rain the night before. It was like 40% chance. Teed off at 7:03 in the morning. Now, when you and I discussed this 84.5 number, and Mark Immelman was talking a lot of trash, was like, there's no chance you'd do it. I was under the assumption that we were going to play up a little bit.
You were in Jordan golf shoes, man.
Yeah, you know it. Those are kind of sweet. Although they're kind of ruined now, which I'm kind of bummed. They're leather on the outside. You like that?
I hate you.
The Dan was here on the photo there. Oh, that's messed up. Warning plus 18. That was my final score over 18 over par, which was kind of ugly. It got a little sideways. It was a blast. It was really tough. The 84.5 number, though, I thought was going to be playing like up one tee. So you're talking like 500 or 600 yards shorter of a course. When I got there, the group I was playing with was like, hey, where do you want to play from? I was like, I'd love to play the tips, but I'll do the group thing. Wherever I'll do whatever you guys want to do. And one other guy in the group, really good dude, he's like, what are we doing? Why would we play the back? Like,
let's
play the tips like they do. He's like, does it matter if you shoot 85 or 95 or 105? No, you'd rather it'd be a cooler story to say you played from where they played from.
Nope, you'd rather be able to say you shot an 82 on the black.
No.
Yeah, you would. Crazy. You definitely would.
So our mindset was like, all right, let's play from the tips.
Right.
So we played from the tips. I was getting heckled by the starter right as I was teeing off. He's like, you think you're going to shoot 84? You're crazy.
Right.
Like literally as I was stepping over my ball, so I had to step away.
Yeah.
You know how one, you can just take the shortcut?
Sure.
Right over the trees.
Did you? You laced it?
Bombed it.
Hey, yo.
It might have gone through them, but it got to the fairway. Had like a, and then wedge in.
Yep.
Had like a 20-footer for birdie. Lipped out.
Ooh.
Easy par. I'm like, this is going to be cake. I got all there. The next hole, hit my drive in the rough, like it was kind of a dog leg left. Number sure. two, hit it in the rough.
You went driver?
I won't break everything down. Oh, yeah, I went driver all day. Right. I was, but it was a big mistake. Mm. There's a look at the scorecard. Mm. So number two, this is an example of, and then a double on three, the 235-yard into
that's
the
wind par
three.
That's a very tough par three.
I absolutely blasted my hybrid. I have a two-iron hybrid.
Yep.
Blasted it and was short of the green.
Right.
Like, and then I had to chip up and it went off the back. That was a rough hole.
What happened on the par five? I figured on four, the par five, you could have been.
That was the hole that we watched together.
Sure.
We were sitting right there. And that was actually one of the, so I only hit two fairways with my driver all day long.
That's tough.
So that one I missed right, another missed fairway. But because it was where all the crowd was watching.
Sure.
It was like trampled down. Yeah, it was actually like my best lie of the day. Perfect layup.
Mm-hmm.
So I have about 72 yards to the pin. And the caddy goes, you only want to hit this 50. I'm like, what? I'm like, why? He's like, trust me.
Right in the bunker.
No. So I went with the 72 because I was thinking, you know what? He doesn't know.
Yeah.
I can drop it right in there.
Right.
Went off that back. And it, like, this is the thing. Like, I wasn't inspecting that. If I played the course today, like,
yeah.
day after, I would have realized some of my mistakes. That one, even though he tried to
help
me.
You didn't miss in the right spots.
Exactly. I didn't miss in the right spots, So that was there. But the thing about it was, so only two fairways hit. The driver was sprayed all over the place. The rough, like, was the story. And that's what we said all week, was the driver was going to be the most important club in the bag
yeah.
for the pros.
Yep.
Brooks Koepka was second in driving all week. That's why if you could go out there and place in the fairway, which obviously you can't.
Right.
But you could be like, man, you could be around par.
Right.
It's just so, the penalty for hitting in the rough is like a hazard.
Sure.
Like you play here in Florida. I grew up down here. You hit it in the rough. You just rip out whatever club and just rip it. And it's like, oh, no problem. Up there, I could only advance it about 30 or 40 yards. And it was like a great, I would swing. I would only take a pitching wedge.
Yeah.
Like the caddy, we actually were on the same page on the front. So the front, I shot 42 and I was just taking this approach, like conservative. It was funny because I was talking to Debo and Mikey before the show and I was like, did you watch Tiger play on Friday?
Right.
And if you remember, Tiger was doing that all day long. So I was like, me and Tiger were on the same mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
actually doing the smart thing, punching, like just hard as I could swing. And it was going 40 yards.
So what people don't realize is like the grass down here is a hard, stiff bladed grass.
Yes.
So even when it gets wet, it doesn't really change the effect of the grass.
Right.
That northern grass, I don't know what it's called.
Oh.
It's wispy. It's like, and when it gets wet, it becomes so thick and dense that it literally just grabs your club face.
Yes.
There's nothing you can do with
that. And it sucks in the ball like, to the depth.
Correct. It's sitting down. Like our grass, it'll sit up in.
Yes.
Like, you could get in the rough and that had that thing basically on a tee.
I didn't have one ball that stayed up in the rough. They all went down.
Right.
It took a long time to find them, even though you knew exactly where they were. You'd spend like 3 minutes looking for them. One time my caddy stepped on the ball. And so it's like, so he goes, you can place this now.
Right.
And I was like, really? So I was like, sweet. Maybe I, like, placed it as gently, like, 1 inch over, I placed it straight to the bottom.
Yeah,
just didn't work. So that was my round, 88. If I played it again, I would feel confident I could break that score, but I'll take it.
Breaking 90, I take that all day on the black from the tips. So don't feel bad about that, bro.
All right, so that was my disastrous day at a Bethpage Black. The Warriors did not have a disastrous day. They actually finished the sweep of Portland. Really impressive game, to say the least. They had now advanced to their fifth straight finals. Even without Andre Iguodala, even without Kevin Durant, even without Boogie Cousins, who I think we forget is even on the team because he hasn't been with them for so long, it's no problem for them. They go off. Steph Curry had 37. He had 25 in the first half, and surprisingly, he was going toe-to-toe with Myers Leonard. For Portland. But they found a way once again to get it done. Now they have 9 days to rest until the final start. I mean, there's only so many accolades you can give this team, but they deserve all of them.
I mean, yeah, you're talking about five straight finals appearances. You're in a rare air now as a team with your legacy. You're talking about, you know, even the Boston Celtics with Bill Russell and those guys. What was it? 10? Was it 10 straight or 9 straight? But there were only 8 or 9 teams.
Straight.
There were only 8 or 9 teams in the league when they did that, though, Danny.
I wasn't aware of that until you guys were talking about this morning.
Right. There are 30 teams in the NBA right now, and none of them have accomplished the 5 straight. You got 4 straight with the Celtics. You have 4 straight with the Lakers, both in the 80s. And then the Bulls with 3 and 3 and the 2-year gap for MJ. So, you know, this is something we've never seen before. And, you know, the way this team is able to continue to kind of reinvent itself, I thought they would lose last night. I thought it would be close, but I thought without Andre Iguodala, you know, that would just be a little too much. They'd probably just take it home and win. This team is made of championship metal. Like, I know it's cliche, but they understand what's at stake. They understand the importance of closing out games when they need to close them out so that they can bank that rest, the advantage that rest will mean for them when they get to the finals. Everything that you need to know about a championship chase, they understand it and they execute. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, they've been around that block. They've done that. And so, you know, when you have to close out a game, even if you're minus three of your better contributing players, they figure out a way to get that done because it's that important to them and everyone in the building understands it.
That's why every time we talk about the Warriors, whether it's the preseason, whether it's the All-Star break, whatever point in the season, I'm always like, it's a done deal. Like, it doesn't matter. And I'm pretty sure I said it on the show a couple times, like, even if one of their guys gets hurt,
you have,
they'll be fine. But I do think it's unique that you kind of have these three. Debo and I were trying to come up with a nickname for it, because they have, like, the Yankees had the core four with them for all their world championships. You have the Hamptons five for them, but really it's the three. It's Draymond, Steph, and Clay. And you have
right.
the Splash Brothers plus Draymond, and they've been the constant that have been there, and they deserve, like, some of this, the majority of this credit, I think. But it is, like, how do you explain the fact that they're 7-4 in the postseason, and their playoff stats, 7-4 with KD, 5-0 without, almost every statistical category, they're up a little bit, not majorly. Is it like, but I'm not saying that Kevin Durant isn't the best player in the world or that he's not that good, but there is zero drop off without him, which is insane.
The way you explain it is they, like, it is Steph's team. It's always been Steph's team. Even when Kevin Durant came and Steph was willing to kind of share the spotlight, it always remained Steph's team. Kevin Durant is a brilliant offensive player, and he's just, I shouldn't qualify it with offense. He's a great player. He's a very good defender too. But what makes that run is Steph Curry, then Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, right? Steph is the guy that makes that work. And I do think it's interesting, and I think the conversation should be had, that if Steph doesn't welcome KD with open arms, is KD the best player on the planet right now? Or are we talking about Steph Curry possibly being the best player on the planet? Like, do you know how selfless
yes.
it is for a dude like that who was on the trajectory that Steph Curry was on to say, nah, I can accommodate you, bro. Like, and not only will I accommodate you, but I'll bring you in and basically relinquish, like, control of this franchise that I have competing for championships every year and my MVP trophies, and I'll let that go so that we can get that done. I mean, I don't know that we give that dude enough credit for allowing KD, and I am saying allowing KD.
Not only do we not give him enough credit, he was getting knocked just a few weeks ago for his
his performance.
Yeah, in the playoffs. It's like, well, where are his numbers? They're down. If you look at his numbers per 36 minutes played with and without Kevin Durant, it's been insane how he stepped up his game, going from 20 minutes with Kevin Durant on the team to 33.
Well, in fairness, you or I didn't. You neither.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like, it was driving me nuts that people in our business were criticizing him, saying, well, maybe he wasn't as good as we thought. I think he's better than we thought. Like, I think he's still continued on that trajectory. You know, it would have been first time he didn't have his MVP. He was getting all this love, was a breakout star with Under Armour, like, was coming into his own as one of the best players in the league. And I don't know what it was that people just didn't want to give him the recognition that he deserved. And then right when he's about to really, like, challenge even LeBron for one of the best players in the game, Kevin Durant comes and, as you said, he, like, defers to him and kind of relinquishes his role as the ball dominant player on that team. And then all of a sudden, like, the perception of him changes. To me, it shows a lack of knowledge, like, from people that criticize him.
Yeah. Some of it's packaging, right? It's what you're used to seeing, what you're comfortable, saying is great. And he doesn't necessarily, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, check all the boxes, you know, not big strapping. Like, do you know what I mean? Not jumping over the rim. You know, there are things that you're used to seeing a basketball player do that you would regard as the best player on the planet that Steph Curry doesn't do. And sometimes it's hard for people to, like, you know, shift the way they see things to some degree. But, you know, if you're out there and you haven't taken account of what this dude is doing in Kevin Durant's absence, like, and you were one of the people that was knocking him a couple weeks ago, you need to tune in. Now, here's where it gets interesting for me, Danny, because I do think that without Kevin Durant, they're great and they can do some really cool things. I don't know that you beat a Milwaukee team without Kevin Durant. And that's what Kevin Durant represented. And I said it from the very beginning when they brought him in. Did they need him? Not necessarily. They were good enough to win without him, but he's a great luxury to have. a dude at 6'11 that when all else fails, if they can figure out a game plan to kind of neutralize Steph, Klay Thompson's not making shots, and they've for some reason figured out how to the antidote for your offense and your movement, just give him the ball and let him get 40.
Yep.
Great luxury to have.
Bucks, we don't even know if they're playing him yet for sure.
Oh, you know. Oh, you know.
We'll see about that.
You and I
might disagree on that one too, because I think it doesn't matter if KD's back or not. I think they're going to win it regardless, but we'll have a lot of time to discuss that. Right. They got 9 days off, as I mentioned earlier. Portland, do you view this season as a success?
Sure.
All right, so how do you build on that success? Because if you look at some of the numbers, there's not much they can do to this roster with some of the cap restrictions they've got. Already committed to Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, who are a great backcourt, but man, they failed to really mount a significant challenge.
They're too small. They're too small, dude.
Yeah.
Like those two guys, let's see. You got 61 in Dame over 2, CJ McCollum, 3 for 4.
They have $126 million in committed salaries next year. $132
That's tough. You're paying Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, and Myers Leonard. Okay, so here's what happens.
They need to hope that the Warriors break up. Like, that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, but then you still got to play probably Houston, and the Lakers will be getting better. So as you're currently constituted, right, you have a lower ceiling than the rest of those teams. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're pretty much at their ceiling, or they were at their ceiling against Denver and to some degree Oklahoma City.
Right.
Both of those guards are cooking. They're giving you big monster numbers, and they'll carry you as far as either one of them can. But they're smaller guards. You saw it a couple years ago with New Orleans when Jrue Holiday really got up and was physical, and then they had Rajon Rondo that could match up with the other one, and they gave those two dudes fits. And if you don't have anyone else on that roster, and they do not, they can get you buckets, they can play make a little bit. I mean, Evan Turner can, but Evan Turner's not an $18 million a year player. Sorry, Evan.
Right.
Like, good for you. Right. Sorry. They need another guy, a 6'7", a Kevin Durant. A poor man's version of Kevin Durant. Someone out there on the wing with some length, some athleticism, some skill level that can balance those two small guards out a little bit. Yusuf Nurkic, it would have been interesting for me to see them because admittedly I didn't watch all year. Mm-hmm. But to see what they look like offensively with Yusuf in there, I mean, if he's a very gifted big man, kind of like, Nikola Jokic-ish.
Right.
That could be the answer. I don't know that. But what I saw from them in this playoff run is too small, and too much of your offense has to go through those two small guards.
Let me ask you a question. I know it might sound stupid early because the Houston Rockets gave the Warriors more of a challenge in their series, but over the next 3 years,
yeah,
whose roster would you rather have, Portland's or Houston's? Because I don't think I think so too.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Even though, like, I think Chris Paul's getting older.
Yeah.
Hurry.
And he looked bad.
Yeah,
he
exactly. Bad. He was starting to look bad already. But either one of them, though, I don't think is going to knock off the Warriors until the Warriors get broken up. And I don't know if Kevin Durant leaves, I think it makes them more susceptible. But as we were just talking about, like, as long as they got Draymond, Steph, and Klay, they're still going to dominate.
They're good. They're really good. Now, they're locked into Chris Paul for getting rid of that. And
it's
the last year of a deal and someone wants it. But, we haven't even talked about teams like the Denver Nuggets.
Right, who were getting better.
Super young.
Yep.
You've got pieces over there like in Michael Porter Jr. that was a steal, I think, in last year's draft because he was coming off the back. That's not even a free agent acquisition. That's cheap money that's going to come in and add to some of that youth and some of that, explosiveness offensively. Isaiah Thomas was great,
yep.
Right? Those small guards, unless you're pairing them with bigger, more strapping people that can get it done, small guards are going to struggle in the playoffs when they start swallowing that whistle, when they're not giving you a march to the free throw line. And so you can have one of them,
mm-hmm.
but when all of your scoring, all of it is predicated on two relatively small guards and how they go from night to night, you're putting yourself in a really precarious situation if another team has the answer for that. Yeah. And the trapping, I found it interesting because I did watch like last night a bit and Portland was making an effort to trap. If they go back and look at that film, they didn't execute well. And Myers Leonard, for as good as he was offensively, he wasn't attached to his screener, his offensive player. And so Steph Curry would come off the screen. When you're trapping a guy like Steph Curry, you want to be up. you want to be above your man if you're the big. So when Steph's coming off of that, he's looking at your chest. He can't get downhill on you. Once he turns that corner and he even gets one step coming downhill at a 7 foot big, his man's got hung up on that screen a little bit because the screener kind of rolled into him. That's essentially a one-on-one with you and Steph Curry. That's a recipe for disaster.
Right.
You got to be up, attached, up the line, make Steph take two steps that way. You slide with him. The guard can slide with him. And now you've got some action. That's what they did to Dame Lillard, and Portland didn't execute it well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Truly, it's saddening and disheartening to think he believes things that are a misperception. I have talked to him several times since he decided to step away. We've had many joy-filled conversations. In fact, 2 days ago, we were reliving the combine and the fourth pick and talking about the great future that this franchise has. So these things are surprising to hear and disheartening. But I look forward to the opportunity to talk with him and sit down with him and work through them, just like in any relationship, because they're just simply not true. I stand beside him. I stand with him as a colleague, as a partner. I've always supported everything he's done and will continue to. And, you know, I think that's the best way to address that.
All right. That was Lakers GM Rob Pelinka. It's amazing to me how much he looks like Rob Lowe, but not like the Rob Lowe that plays the villain. Like, you know, the Rob Lowe that they kind of make look goofy?
The grimy Rob Lowe.
Yes, that's what he looks like, and that's what sounds like Magic thinks he is.
Grimy.
I missed yesterday because I know you guys got to Magic Johnson's comments on First Take. I love it because I've called the Lakers a dumpster fire on here. Basically, with Magic came and done, he took like a gallon of gasoline and threw it on top of the dumpster fire just to make sure it kept burning and exploded even bigger.
Right.
I will give Pelinka some credit because he did take the complete high road, because Magic threw him under the bus big time yesterday. And for him to just kind of blow it off and say, hey, we had a great time together and we did this and it was great, and I just talked to him 2 days ago. So it is so screwed up. We have not seen a franchise this dysfunctional like in a really, really long time. They might be the new standard, the new gold standard for dumpster fire.
You was a lie. You was a lie. One of you mofos is lying, bro. I don't know which one of y'all is lying. One of you is a lie. Because you can't sit up there and tell me, oh, yeah, like, you know, we stand together. We stood together. We're partners. I've supported everything he does. And then Magic be out there saying, like, hey, dog, my man is a snake.
Right.
It can't be. One of you fools is lying. I tend to believe Magic. I know.
Well, Magic doesn't have anything to lose.
He's got nothing to lose in this. He came out. He quit his job. He said, yo, y'all can have this. This is not what I want to be doing right now. But let me tell you what that looks like inside the building. And from everything that we've got since Magic's left around the coaching search and around, you know, everything that they've been trying to pull off, it lends itself to me believing that it is a mess, and it's a true mess. And some of the stuff that Magic talked about, like some of that, you know, insubordination and stuff like that, you know, those are messy things. I believe Magic.
I believe Magic 100%. I think there could be some break in the communication, clearly. Cause I could see a circumstance where Jeannie Buss, who has referenced Magic being like family, she's idolized Magic, right? She wanted him to come in and help run the organization. She would do whatever it takes. So she's like, Magic, I'll let you do whatever you want. Just come work with us. It's good. We can help us recruit LeBron.
Right.
I think that was probably one of the main reasons she got him in there. And she was probably
like, don't hand him a president's job to do that though.
But I think she did. No, I think that's what I'm alluding to. It's like she gave him this opportunity to do this. And she was like, I don't care if you still vacation for 5 weeks.
Right.
I don't care if you go to the movies with your wife on Sunday. I just want you to be the face of the franchise. Help me run this thing.
Yeah.
So he agrees to it. He's like, yeah. Then Rob Pelinka is hired as well. And he's probably busting his tail like most GMs do.
Right.
Working, grinding, you know, meeting with scouts and doing all this stuff. And every time he comes to the office, he's like, where the heck is Magic?
Right.
You know, and he didn't get the memo that Genie said Magic can do whatever he wants. And I could see that starting to fester behind the scenes and him getting, you know, irritated and irritated. And then I could totally understand how this unfolds.
There are a lot of ways to handle that. First of all, you don't hand somebody a president's job. Just to recruit someone. Secondly, if you do hand him a president's job and you fully understand that he's not going to be grinding it in the office, because you should have known that.
Right.
Then you make that clear to Rob Pelinka, who's under him. Hey, look, he's your boss, but he ain't going to be in the building every day. Your job is to do X, Y, and Z. Thirdly, if Rob Pelinka starts to grumble and gripe and go above Magic to you about it, and this is where the buck stops. It's with Genie. If you're Genie, you have to say, don't come in here with that bull.
Right.
I already told you that this is what it's going to look like. I don't want to hear any griping and crying, Mr. Rob Pelinka. This is what Magic was going to do. He's still fulfilling his obligation to the Lakers, if in fact he was. All right? Do your job. Or you can keep it moving. But what we're not going to do is we're not going to start stabbing each other in the back, and there's not going to be dissension within this organization because you're coming to me about something that I already know. So the buck stops with Genie.
Yes.
Like this thing has been run poorly from the top. And here's the thing about culture, Danny, and I talk about culture a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Within a building, culture is set from the top. It's not just a word. It's a way of life. It's the way you conduct yourself on a day to day. It's whether you're going to be detail oriented in everything you do, and that trickles down, right? So then the people under you understand, man, that's the way my boss handles this. This is the way I got to handle this. And the people under them understand. And before you know it, you can walk into someone's building and everyone is in lockstep. Everyone understands the way you're approaching it. The Lakers have no real culture and no direction. And that starts with Genie.
So we got this Lakers organizational chart. Genie Buss the head. She's the owner. Rob Pelinka is the GM. Tim Harris is the COO. He was mentioned in Magic's press conference. Jesse Buss, another Buss, assistant GM. Joey Buss is the G League. Now you have Frank Vogel. You know who's not on there? You don't have your boy Rambis, Kurt Rambis, and Linda Rambis,
who had
a voice in this thing. You probably don't have like the head of the ticket sales, who also probably has direct access to Genie Buss, and she listens to
Phil Jackson was involved.
Absolutely,
in that.
Phil Jackson's there. Like, there's. That's the thing. Most organizations do have a flowing, you know, an organizational chart.
Yeah.
It shows the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
The problem is, it's like, it's Genie Buss, and then there's not really a chart flowing down. It's like a circle all around her, and they're all like, ching, ching, ching. They're all like coming at her.
Correct.
And she's willing to listen to them.
You ever
like,
seen
she's
them?
Out there just like, yeah, okay. And then one day, Linda Rambis comes in, and she doesn't like Ty Lue or whatever it is, and so she's like, yeah, that makes sense. And then the next day, you know, whoever comes into our office and says, no, I love Frank Vogel, and so she's like, okay, let's hire him. Like, it's just all these different voices, and none of it makes any sense.
And, you know, Magic even kind of touched on it a little bit. You know, yesterday when he gave his press conference about there being too many people with a voice in
that.
Again, that's another leadership thing.
Absolutely.
You have a small circle of people that who can have your ear when push comes to shove and a big decision needs to be made. If you start listening to every voice that wants to have an opinion on a topic like that, your head starts to spin. You can't keep clarity and you start to, you know, lose focus on what you should be focused on. And that happens way too often, you know, with the Lakers. And, you know, I don't have any beef with Genie or the Lakers. Like, I don't really care. This is just my take on what I'm watching happen out there. But if you can't run it and you can't control it, then get out of the way. Let someone do it who can.
But she's never going to do that.
Well, I mean,
you know, like, I mean, I wouldn't either if I was her. Like, you're the owner of the Lakers. Like, she's not going to sell the team, Magic, although he did say he would like to buy them.
Yeah.
It's just, somebody like needs to give her a business class. Like, hey, how do you run a
organization? Well, she ain't doing that either.
No, like,
you know what I mean? Like,
but you would think it's sometimes she's got to have like a little self-awareness and say, hold on a second. This has become an absolute laughingstock of the NBA. And that's why I think Magic is trying to, see, I'm trying to get after, like, I wonder if Magic just likes being in the spotlight still and being a buzz and, like, having all this, you know, conversation about him. Or is he genuinely trying to help the Lakers by airing out some of their problems, saying, man, this is how bad it really is.
I think it can be a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I clearly Magic loves Magic. Yes. I mean, I don't think we can debate that. But I do think somewhere in his heart of hearts, like, Magic got a glimpse into the way things are really being run there and was like, this is a mess. And we talked about it yesterday. I can't tell you for certain that Magic is a great president in an NBA. I know that he's not a great coach in the NBA. But I also know that he is a very astute businessman, and a lot of what he touches in the business sector turns to gold. And so that's essentially what the capacity in which you would want him, you know, dealing with the Lakers, because he's proven that he ain't going to do it at the coaching level. And I don't know that he wants the grind of being the day-to-day on the field president, but purely from a business overall perspective, how we're going to run businesses, he does that very well. And so maybe, you know, if she wants to lean on Magic, it'll be less in the president's capacity and more in the overall, like, how do I clean up my business capacity?
So you got Frank Vogel, who was announced that day. I mean, it's a comical how bad their timing is, how everything comes out.
Magic's straight sabotage that thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. So now you've got free agency is, you know, a couple months away. It's in July. How hard is it going? Like, is there enough time to salvage this and make things look better than they do now in the course of 6-7 weeks? They have to. If they're trying to allure different, you know, the big name free agents, they want to make a run.
I don't know how much this deters people from coming to LA.
As long as that check still clears.
The check, the weather.
Yeah.
You're in Los Angeles, the Starlets, like, all of that still exists, and you still have LeBron.
Yep.
Right? So all of those things are going to speak to people. The market is the market. You know, Lakers can be a mess and it'll still be attractive to most guys. They're going to be looking at whether they can win a championship and whether LeBron represents their best avenue to a championship. You know, whether they can get the home in Malibu or Manhattan Beach or wherever that is that they want, and whether they get the max contract. That's what they're going
to
be looking at.
I mean, Frank Vogel has got to be.
Jason Kidd will be the coach of the LA Lakers before long. Frank Vogel had to get back in the game, right?
Right.
Frank was out. He needed to get his name back in the game you got to be back in before they'll give you another job sometimes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
So you get your feet back in and then maybe you can go somewhere else. That's going to be Jason Kidd's job at some point.
Yeah, sure feels like it. All right, welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. So the Minnesota Timberwolves, I keep struggling with that stupid name. It's not that hard. The T-Wolves, they have decided to keep Ryan Saunders in place, make him the full-time head coach, with some of the younger players' input, including Karl-Anthony Towns. They're saying, hey, we like him. We've had a good time with him. Let's keep him as our head coach. They announced it. He's 33 years old. My first thing when I see this is, oh, there's no way this guy gets this job, 33 years old, if it wasn't for his dad being a, you know,
bro,
lifer.
Come on, bro. He's been an assistant coach for 10 years already.
Which means he got a job when he was 23 years
that's
old
okay.
as an assistant coach, which does now, not happen
that,
in this
that
league.
That may have been because of his dad being Flip Saunders, but he's earned his keep, right?
You think he has?
10 years. Well, I don't have any proof to say he hasn't.
Well,
a 10-year assistant, you should probably be up for a head job if you're any good.
Yes. But don't you think that's the whole reason he's in this position? I like Flip Saunders. He was at ESPN. And he did some. I liked him.
I think
I'm sure Ryan's a good dude. Like, I'm sure, like, Kyle Shanahan, good kid. Yeah. Like, he was on ball boy.
Right.
I was in the Broncos. But
let's say your son, right?
Yes.
It's quarterback.
Yes.
You could probably. Probably, if you really wanted to, get him on the team at Florida State, right? Like,
probably,
walk on.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Walk on.
Yes.
Right, you get him on the team.
Yes.
If he ain't no good, they ain't going to start him, are they?
No.
No.
They would not.
You could get, so Flip could get him in the door as an assistant coach before he probably should have gotten in the door as an assistant coach. I'll grant you that. But I don't know that you continue to stay around on people's benches for 10 years and then ultimately, you know, get the head job just off daddy being Flip Saunders.
All right. I think you make a really good point, because you're not just going to be handed the job. It's not like he hasn't been paying his dues. He's done that. But I look at some of these other ones, like Lane Kiffin, youngest coach in NFL history, was a disaster with the Raiders.
Right.
His dad, Monty Kiffin, obviously a lifer in the NFL coaching ranks as well. Kyle Shanahan just mentioned some of these other ones. Kyle Shanahan still remains to be seen how good he's going to be as a coach, but he's had his opportunity. I just, like, when I hear that term nepotism, I think professional sports probably are the most guilty of name association. If your last name is somebody who was a good coach, you are going to always have a job in the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, whatever sport it is. And I guess, I don't know, like, I totally hear you. If I was If I had a son, I would absolutely, if my daughter wanted to be a broadcaster,
right,
I would be saying, hey, I'll call up all the people I know at ESPN, CBS, Fox, all of them, saying, hey, man, remember me? I got my daughter. She's 23. She's looking for work.
Yes.
And hopefully I could get her in the door. And that's, I guess that's just how life works.
That's life. Yes, yeah. That is life. I now the jury is out on
Ryan.
Yeah, and whether he.
Do you have a problem at all that, like, I don't know if it would be a red flag, but I'm a little bit curious that he was so strongly endorsed by his players.
Why?
I don't know. Sometimes your players like you a little too much. It might mean that they're walking all over you. And because of the way Jimmy Butler talked about this team in general, the younger kind of soft players, I mean, he basically called them out.
Right.
Like, I wonder if they like having a coach who's friendlier and nicer and isn't going to drive them that hard.
Well, just because they like him doesn't mean that his style won't produce. So I think that remains to be seen, right? The jury's out on whether that style, it is probably a lot different than the way Tibbs, but Tibbs is on the other end of that spectrum. Like, Tibbs is a grind you out, like take years off of your career type of coach. So wouldn't be surprising that Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins would respond better to a younger guy with more of a today's approach to the work that it requires and the rest that they're giving some of these guys. But I don't think you can make a determination on whether that's a good or bad thing until you see the way they come out next year and play. And his 17-25 after replacing Thibodeau,
right?
That's a mess. You know, you inherited a mess. So you know, general manager, they got a new GM, new president of basketball ops. They've got to do the job in terms of getting the right pieces that are complementary to some of the stars that you have in place. And then you start to get your culture in the building if you're Ryan Saunders, continue to develop that. And then you can make a judgment on him through half of next season. Like, first half of next season, I think you've got a good enough sample size to say, okay, you want to see that they're playing hard. You want to see that they're playing together. You want to see that they're competing. I wouldn't even judge it off of wins and losses that quickly into next season. I would just want to see that we're headed in the right direction.
If you have as much money as they have committed to Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, I would probably want their input too.
Correct.
You know, like, because that relationship is really, really important. As we've seen, some organizations, if the coach isn't on the same page as the players, it becomes a disaster and it's contentious. And usually the coach gets run off pretty soon if it doesn't work out.
That's fantastic. Those dudes are making that much money. And I think it's fantastic, but neither one of them has won anything.
No. No. They're robbing. I mean, this is robbery.
Nah, but I mean, I shouldn't say that. No, but a lot of dudes in the NBA.
I stole a lot of money from the NFL and wasn't anywhere near that much. Yeah. We're all stealing at some point. Those guys are just stealing a little bit more.
That's a lot of bread.
That is a lot of cake.
Yeah.
All right, so we're just talking about Lane Kiffin and how he got his first coach job. He is the head coach at Florida Atlantic University right down the road in Boca Raton.
Mm-hmm.
He has really embraced – we did our podcast-only special on Last Chance U. He's embraced – FAU as the destination that's not a junior college.
Absolutely.
So he's taking in all kind of guys. I don't know if troublemakers is the right word sometimes, but sometimes knuckleheads, sometimes guys who just weren't good enough. It's all different reasons, but he'll go out there, he'll tweet at people. It's hashtag come to the FAU.
Yeah.
Not come to the U, it's come to the FAU.
Yeah.
DeAndre Francois was at Florida State, was a pretty good player, tore his ACL, got killed while he was playing quarterback because his offensive line was atrocious. Then gets sent packing because he had a domestic violence issue. There was a videotape, supposedly it's kind of, but he's owned up to it. He's apologized for it. So you're assuming there's something there, obviously. And Lane Kiffin takes him in. Do you have any problem with FAU taking in DeAndre Francois or anybody else that has serious issues or more, not just academic issues, but histories like this?
I do not support domestic violence.
No, that's just go without saying.
I don't have a problem with them taking DeAndre Francois, and this is why. When you're at a school like an FAU or an FIU or any of these, like, you know, smaller mid-major type of schools, you're not getting a DeAndre Francois normally. Do you know what I mean? You're not getting a swing at a Zion Williamson. They live in your city and they won't even look at you. Do you know what I mean? So this is your only real chance to have a talent like that come and help further your program. And so sometimes when you're those schools, you have to roll the dice a little bit more on character.
Yep.
Chasing talent. And that's because you can't otherwise allure that type of talent. And some of these guys, you know, given the second opportunity, not all of them, but some of them given a second opportunity, you know, wind up turning it around. not just on the field, but off the field in terms of their personal life, getting their degrees and so on and so forth. And if you can help facilitate that for a young man and in the process get a talent that you normally wouldn't otherwise get, then yeah, I support it.
I'm all for redemption stories, you know, for guys that can make mistakes, own up to them and change their lives around. There's got to be some place for them to do that. Now, you know, some people would say, what are you talking about? It doesn't have to be football. Like, you don't have to give them back football. I realize that.
Why does football have to be taken?
Or basketball or anything.
Or no, but right. Like, why does it have to be?
I don't know. Because I think football and being in a team atmosphere with a lot of structure, a lot of discipline can be a good thing for somebody. Now, I do think, and I'm sure that Lane Kiffin and FAU have a pretty tight policy with DeAndre Francois. Hey, we're sure. giving you this last chance.
Yeah, you got no strikes.
You got no strikes, I mean, and this is what's going to happen. Because if you look at it, DeAndre Francois was punted. Like, he was kicked out of Florida State. Mm-hmm. Like, he's good enough to play at a Florida State or a Power 5 school, and now his punishment is he has to go to FAU, which, you know, there could be worse punishments, obviously, but I'm all for giving kids chances. You know?
I am too. I hate the conversation about
He should never play again or never be allowed.
Just as it pertains to sport, and this is a bigger conversation, if you're telling me that someone has done something so egregious that they should be in prison, okay.
Right.
Put them in jail.
Absolutely.
No problem with that. But if it's not to that degree, why taking away a sport? Like, do you know what I mean? Why is that got to be the punishment for it? Now, you know, again, I support, look, bro, he did something that bad and he got to go to jail.
Right.
Like, you made your bed. You lie in it. But I never understood he should never be able to play again. I don't understand that.
That's where I think all the outrage gets misplaced, because we get mad at coaches. We get mad at teams for signing guys, giving other opportunities. What about the justice system? If they weren't put in jail, if it was failed there, why aren't we mad at them?
Right, right. You know, it's displaced, correct. Because that's my thing. Like, dude, put him in jail. If that's, and I'm not lobbying for DeAndre to go to jail. I'm just saying, if it didn't warrant him going to jail, well, why the hell should he be not able to play his sport ever again?
Right, absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him at Florida Atlantic. Does he get, I hope he does. I hope he does get things changed around. Maybe he can help other guys not make the same mistakes he did. Like, eventually, that's what we'd all like to do, is prevent domestic violence.
Correct.
Maybe come out there and be a voice on their side, like Ray Rice has become. On a lighter note, why can't we get Last Chance U to film FAU? Like, they've embraced it. That would be pretty entertaining. Like, I think they need to do that. We need a Netflix special on FAU, and it can be season 4 or 5, whatever it is, of Last Chance U. It can be FAU.
I need to go down. I checked out a game at FAU last year. I really like their setup.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Right down the street from my house,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, FIU is starting to do some cool stuff, too. I saw some unis that they put out. Like, they were like a pink chrome face mask and stuff. Butch and those guys got it rolling, so I got to go down and check out an FIU
game. All right, welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. Bucks Raptors game 4 tonight. We were just talking about 80s movies. Can't Buy Me Love, which you just brought up, might be the all-time.
Phenomenal.
Patrick Dempsey
phenomenal.
Was in that, trying to be the cool dude.
What?
That was so
favorite
epic.
Line. I
was
say
good.
That. I you know say the, that line you know to like my wife all the time.
So it was when we were in high school. Which one?
He went from like totally geek to like totally chic. I don't know why. It just comes out of nowhere.
It's one of the all-time lines. I was in high school when that was going out.
Yeah.
Do you remember their high school was like in Arizona?
Yeah.
I wanted to go. Like, I would tell my parents, like, I want to move to Arizona and go to that high school.
I think it was Tucson or something.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous. Yeah. It was out there. Unbelievable. Remember he took her on the date scene to the plane graveyard.
Yeah, graveyard. Like, that's right.
That was pretty Mac, but that was a great movie. All right. So we got to do actual sports. And then Game of Thrones recap. Bucks Raptors. I'm mad at you guys. All of you guys that are on our text chain. Debo, Coca, you.
What happened?
Because last night, about a half hour before the game, I'm like, who's going to win the game tonight? I was like, more importantly, who covers in this one? Does Portland have a chance? Nothing. No responses.
You
game's
know
over.
I am hit or miss on the
on the
but I would have led you astray.
Quiet.
I would have led you astray. I would have told you that Portland might get him last
night. That's what I bet, too. Yeah. So that one did not come out too well. What about tonight? Bucks, Raptors. It is game 4. Milwaukee is a 3-point road favorite.
Oh, are they?
Toronto, yeah. That's a little bit surprising there, isn't it?
That is a little surprising.
I'm seeing, so Debo has 2.5. I'm looking at this side as 3. It's 2.5, 3 points.
They're going to win. Toronto is going to lose. Milwaukee is going to win.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Really?
So you think they get back on track? I mean, shoot, it did take them double overtime the last time. And that was that, I actually bet that game, taking the down 2-0, you're home, your back's against the wall, there's a desperation there, and they took them 2 overtimes to get there.
2 overtimes. Everyone for Toronto played well. Everyone.
Yeah.
Giannis had 39. Pascal Siakam had 25. Marc Gasol made an appearance, like he went back in a time machine to like 2012. Norman Powell jumped up with 19 points. Just about everybody played great. And on the flip side of that, Milwaukee, pretty much everybody played relatively bad. Giannis had 12 points. Chris Middleton was in a slump, 3 for 11. Like, and it went double overtime.
Right.
He barely made any threes. Milwaukee is my pick tonight.
All right. And covering the 2.5 or 3, whatever you get.
Take it.
All right. I'm going to hold you to it tomorrow. If it doesn't hit, I'm going to be riding it like crazy.
Oh, it may be Toronto. I don't know. I'm going with Milwaukee. I think
I like that one. I like that one too. All right. Game of Thrones. I missed yesterday. I knew you and Tommy Tran did a little bit on it yesterday. I thought it was trash. I thought it was a disservice. And I don't like the trend on social media where everybody's just bashing the final season, the last episode, the finale. I don't love it, but I feel like it's all justified. Like, I'm like totally okay with it. And I get it's like some people are so annoyed by it. They had the million subscription or a million petitions.
I want to sign that.
A million people signed.
I thought it was corny as hell until I saw the last episode. Now I need to sign it.
Right. No, because the last episode was corny as hell. Like, that's what the last episode was. When Sam Tarly, whatever his name is up there saying, why don't we let everybody vote?
Yeah.
And, like, it just made no sense. I thought it was a spoof. I thought it was like a Saturday Night Live spoof.
They thought it was a spoof. I saw some article with Bran, whoever that actor's name is, said he got the script, and he read it and was like, is this a joke? And he was, and the writer or the director was like, no, it's not a joke. And he's like, what the what? Like, that's how everybody felt. And here's my beef, because I've been coming in here for weeks saying, you know, who likes the season so far? And I've been like, no, I'm out.
Right.
Everyone's like, oh, no, dude.
I was kind of on the same too. Coca's like a Game of Thrones defender.
You got to have some perspective. Like, you just got to love it for what it is. Like, it's got to wrap it up. Bull stuff. That's been a total mail-in from the very jump. And look, I get that the first, whatever, 7 seasons were based on actual, like, material.
Yes.
You had the wrong mofos going in 6 and 7. 6 was, I mean, or what, 8 and 9? What are you in? 8 and 9, right? Yes. Like, 8 wasn't awful, but 9 has been an absolute train wreck. And they just, of show ends, right?
Yes.
Like, the ones that, like, I didn't really love the Seinfeld end. Like,
right.
When they were in the
but
prison
it, was,
cell.
It wasn't awful. It
wasn't awful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can have your own, what was the one? It's another HBO show, Sopranos.
Yeah.
Like,
that was weird. It was weird. Controversial.
But it wasn't awful. Like, this was awful.
And
on
it was
all
so
accounts.
Different. Like, when he presented the book, The Songs of Fire and Ice, which also happens to be the name of the book series, it's just, it's comically bad how awful it was.
Bro, you're gonna make me angry.
No, I know it is.
I act angry in here sometimes. Now I'm getting angry. All right.
Did you see, your girl, Sansa Stark, did you see what she said? What is her name? Sophie Turner? I think that's her name. She said, hey, everybody shut it because all these people worked hard and they spent all this 11 months out of the year doing this final season 8. She said, leave them alone.
Sansa,
let it be.
You hush your mouth.
Man,
all right.
Like, really? That's where we're going with this thing?
We're going with Bran. We're going with Arya Stark, the baddest mofo on the planet.
Just
on a ship.
Right. She's going to go explore.
I didn't mind John.
That was the one thing I saw coming, which was very predictable. I actually liked the fact that he got her because it was so out of character for him. Like, he's Mr. Loyal, would never stab somebody in the back, and then he liberally stabs her in the stomach.
Yeah, but I even thought that could have been like a little more of a climax type of deal, right? Like, I don't know, man. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't either. But it's done. It's over with. That's it.
Those are years of my life I never get back now.
Lost. That's your Game of Thrones recap by Kennell and Bell.
Hope I'll miss you.
Enjoyed it. Yeah. Sign that petition.